Hey everybody, how's it going? Thanks for joining me this afternoon. I am Orin McIntyre. So we talk a lot about big government, right? The right, conservatives, big government is the enemy, big government is the problem. If we could just cut the government, if we could just get rid of big government, that's the real issue. Once it's gone, everything will be fine. Everything will go back to normal. But we very rarely talk about how we got big government. Yeah, okay, government gives away free stuff. We get it. But it's more than that. There's a lot of economic incentives that brought us big government. There's a lot of cultural decisions that we made that have created big government. And I think probably the largest one, the one that has had the most profound impact on our society, is the way in which we have broken up the different pieces of the family and sold off its responsibilities in the marketplace. And this is something that conservatives have been complicit in. It's something that they have engaged in at every turn and are usually in favor of. And that shift from the understanding of the community as a set of families to a set of individuals, one that the conservatives have bought into because of its economic advantages, has been devastating. Family formation, the ability of people to have children, own homes, create community, and very importantly, then take care of themselves and not rely on that big government, not allow it to enter into our lives. So I want to talk about today, I want to talk about the ways in which we have transferred so many of our important, critical, and I think sacred obligations of family into the marketplace and why that's had the impact that it has. But before I dive into that, guys, I want to tell you about your absolute moral responsibility to hire base people through New Founding. Hey guys, I need to tell you about today's sponsor, New Founding Talent. Look, we all know that the job market is a disaster right now. Based people can't find good companies to work for, and good companies can't find anybody to get the job done. The competency crisis is very, very real. So how do we get these two incredibly important groups together? We need organizations like New Founding. New Founding has created a network of high excellence professionals who are seeking to join grounded American businesses. These are individuals often in elite organizations who are ready for a team and a mission that supports their values instead of working against them. Aligned companies are already using this network to hire high trust, exceptional individuals who can match the culture and mission of their teams. So if you're looking for better employees to build a better world, you need to go ahead and apply for access to the New Founding Talent Network at newfounding.com/talent. You'll get connected with candidates who will build your business. That's newfounding.com/talent. Check it out today. Also, before we get started today, guys, I want to tell you about a new movie The Blaze has. I know you mostly tune into The Blaze for political content, but increasingly we're all overloaded with that. There's too much bad news. We're constantly learning about it. It's nice to mix it up every once in a while, and it's nice to have something like a comedy that you can just relate to. You don't have to worry about it being chock full of even conservative political messages. And that's really what the new Aqua Donkeys movie is over at The Blaze. It's pretty funny, guys. It's about two average pool guys who are out there working their business, and the girl of their dreams becomes available and they start chasing after her. It's really got that dry, absurdist humor that I really enjoy. It's very funny. Just catch the first couple of minutes. I think you'll be hooked right away. Of course, if you want to go ahead and watch that movie, you need to be a subscriber to The Blaze. When you subscribe to The Blaze, of course, you get new programming like that. You get shows like mine here, even episodes that don't appear on YouTube because they've been otherwise pulled off. They've been censored in some way. And of course, you also get access to great documentaries like the one that The Blaze has been doing about the Texas border. So I encourage you to go ahead and become a subscriber. It's like $15 a month and you get access to all that stuff, original comedies, political commentary, documentaries, all kinds of stuff that you're looking for. So make sure that you go ahead and check that out. All right. So the family, right? Like I said, we constantly talk about big government. Big government is the problem. Conservatives, we have to fight big government. We have to get rid of it. That's the real issue. And of course, there's truth to this for sure. The government has scaled up too large. It's taken over too much responsibility. It has too many programs. It's taking too much of your money. And this gives it an overwhelming amount of power. It gets to make all kinds of decisions and enter all kinds of spheres that it should not be involved in. But like I said, we usually don't think about how that happened. Government just got bigger somehow. They made a bunch of programs and that's the end of it. But that's not really how it worked. I think one of the core shifts that has made the growth of government possible is the shift from family, the focus on the family, to take a James Dobson reference, and shifting that to the individual. You see, there's a political theorist called Bertrand de Juvenal. And in his book On Power, Bertrand de Juvenal talks a lot about the spheres of social influence, the spheres of social power. And he says what really keeps government from growing, what really keeps the government's power from expanding, the state's power from expanding, it's not a constitution. It's not checks and balances. It's not a bunch of written rules. Those are nice, but they don't actually restrict government's growth. The thing that keeps government smaller is that other social spheres demand people's allegiance. You see, whether we like it or not, we are not isolated individuals. We are dependent on others, and others are naturally dependent on us. Forgive me, but we live in a society, more or less. And because we live in a society, if we have these different spheres like family and church and community organizations that require us to pay dues and spend time and focus on them, give our money and our efforts, our loyalty, then government can only demand so much of us. And that's critical because the more government is allowed to demand from us, the more it can grow. And so the more the government can have us be less dependent on those organizations and more dependent on the government, the more power it can capture. Now, originally, most societies understood that family was the core, and not just the nuclear family, not just kind of the one that we think of to, two parents and two kids, but the extended family, really, the entire clan, the entire tribe, was the basic unit of civilization. You needed to have that level of support because really government just hadn't gotten that big. There wasn't enough efficiency. There weren't massive bureaucracies. There wasn't the ability to take over all the things that families did. And so that meant that they had to allow and they had to rely on the cohesiveness of a family as kind of the basic unit. The smallest you could really get would be that nuclear family. That was as small as the allowable unit in a civilization could become, because you were so dependent on each other that you at the very least had to have kind of that mother and father, that child and parent relationship to bond each other together, to provide for each other, and do all the things that society needed that government couldn't hope to provide. But we have shifted to the individual. And one of the things that sold this to people, of course, is that family and community are expensive and time-consuming. If you have to take care of your children, you lose all your free time to do, I don't know, play a lot of World of Warcraft or, spend a lot of time watching things while drinking wine with your cat. You have a lot of responsibilities that limit your free time. And if you have to take care of your parents, you have to take care of your brothers and sisters, you have to care about your nieces and nephews, if they get in trouble, if they need help, that's an expanded sphere of responsibility. And if you have to go to your church and take care of your neighbor through the community there and all these other organizations, those are large demands on your time. Alexis de Tocqueville in Democracy in America talked about how the key to America's prosperity was really the voluntary associations it entered into, the amount of free time that people spent, not having free time, binding their time up into these communities, sacrificing for each other and entering into them. And because they had this level of virtue and this social, this civic vigor, they didn't need a bunch of government taking care of these things because they had already assembled the necessary social fabric to control and care for people who slipped through the cracks and had these problems. But we have dissolved a lot of that because that's a lot of effort and we didn't want to do that. And de Juvenal points this out in On Power. He says, look, One of the reasons that government has grown to an unprecedented size, but people still think that they're freer than anyone has ever been in, you know, modern America, is because they don't have all of those other social responsibilities. And this wasn't just because it removed, we didn't just encourage this because it removed those social responsibilities. There's also an economic incentive. When the individual doesn't have all these bonds, when the individual is no longer required to care for a large number of people, no longer involved in the community, no longer expected to take on certain family and community responsibilities, they are suddenly freed up in a very big way for capitalist demands, right? If you have a business, if you have a company that wants to move people from one place to another, and they have deep roots in that community, well, they're probably not going to go. They're not going to move with capital to this new area. They're not going to move with that business to that new area. And so that means that they are locked into their community. They're not willing to break up the thing that they have there just because you decided to move the factory somewhere else, or you decided to move the jobs somewhere else. And conservatives do this all the time. They say, oh, well, no, of course you should move away from your family. You should move away from your town, the place where you live, and chase opportunity somewhere else. That's part of the American dream. That's part of it. You have to be economically mobile. You have to be willing to move geographically to go ahead and follow the jobs, the opportunities, wherever they go. When they say wherever the opportunities, wherever they go, they mean capital is moving somewhere else. And maybe capital decides to shut down the factory in your hometown and desolate everybody there, make sure that they lose their jobs, lose the ability to maintain what made that town functional. And you just have to be willing to do that, because really you're an individual and you're not responsible to a family or a community. You're an individual who should be mobile all the time and willing to chase these opportunities, right? And so we hear about this where, conservatives will say, oh, why do we have big government? Why do we have all the government taking care of all these things that families used to take care of? But then in the next breath, they say, but of course a company should be able to move all its jobs across the country if it feels like it at a moment's notice, or should be able to move those jobs over to, you know, some foreign country at a moment's notice. That's just capitalism. That's just freedom. Now, look, of course, I think that, you know, communism and socialism is a disaster. It doesn't work. But the unbridled form of capitalism, the idea that capitalism is some suicide pact that we have to sign on to no matter what it does to our communities, is insane. Capitalism is a tool for the betterment of our communities. It's not a god to worship. If it does good things, if it's the best economic system for the people it is serving, then you should follow it. But if it ends up having problems, if it ends up devastating communities, then you need to think about what's going on. You need to think about what is happening. And so a lot of what has happened is that conservatives, Republicans have decided to go ahead and tear down communities because it works with their kind of economic plan. It works with their economic ideology. At the end of the day, we're individualists. It's all about the individual. Now, don't get me wrong. Of course, it was always important to have heroic individuals, great men. There were always people who were on their own or kind of had this drive to go beyond the community. And you don't want to restrict people to the point where you're stopping that. But you also can't pretend that every single person is like this. And this is the real problem, is assuming that every single person is an entrepreneur, that every single person is a captain of industry or a great man in some way. This is kind of the libertarian fallacy, right? If we just remove all of these bonds, all these requirements, then everyone will achieve this stuff. Well, no, actually, they won't. Most people will fail. Most people need to be bound up in those communities. Most people are dependent in significant ways on communities. And you need some way for the average person to be able to make a living, have a family, have meaning in their life, have support. And if they don't get it from their families, if they don't get it from the community, eventually they will get it from the government. And that's a big problem, is that we have moved many of the responsibilities of the family out of the social sphere of the family or community and into the marketplace. The terminology that I often like to use for this, borrowing it from Nick Land, is deterritorialization and reterritorialization. Throughout history, there are certain duties, in fact, most duties, were bound up in sacred communal understandings. Okay, you have a personal bond to your family. You have a personal bond to your parents, to your siblings, to your church, to your tribe, everything. You have a deep bond to those people. And that means that you are reliant on them and they are reliant on you. And that had nothing to do with monetary exchange and everything to do with your moral and spiritual duty to those people. However, what we've done is we've taken so many of those responsibilities, things that used to be explicitly part of the family structure specifically, and we have taken them out of their territory, out of their original territorialization. We have deterritorialized them out of that family structure, out of that soil where they originally grew up in. And we have taken them out of that and we have moved them into the marketplace. Now, the marketplace is a powerful and wonderful thing, and it can do really important stuff, and we need it in many ways. But it is not a universal solution, and that's unfortunately what we have treated the marketplace as something that can solve any problem. You hear this again all the time from the right, all the time from conservatives. The invisible hand, the powers of the marketplace. We even have moved it into our decision-making apparatus, the marketplace of ideas. But what you might have noticed is that the marketplace of ideas is not working very well right now. And that's because those decisions were not actually ever supposed to be subjected. Many of those decisions were never supposed to be subjected to the marketplace. Sorry, but what a male or female is should never have been put into the marketplace of ideas. It should have been a settled truth, period. And there's too many axioms, too many fundamental bedrock values that we have taken out of their place and put into the marketplace and put them up for destruction, for discussion, debate, competition. And this is also true, as much as it is for the definition of things like man and woman, for our family duties. Many of the things that originally were located in the family were there for a reason, because they were duties that were too critical to be placed in the marketplace. The marketplace can increase large amounts of efficiency. It can create all kinds of profit. It can scale things up in an amazing degree. But many of these things should never be done for profit. They never should be done at a high level of efficiency or a big scale. They are things that are necessarily personal and critical to be done in a one-on-one manner. You cannot break them out of their context in the family and sell them off in the marketplace without serious consequences. But that's exactly what we've done. We have deterritorialize these critical roles, these critical social values, these critical traditions, these critical understandings out of their context in the family. And we have moved them into the market. And again, many conservatives have been big fans of this. They've said, oh, well, yeah, no, we need to go ahead and do this. We have to focus on the individual and individual freedom. And those, that's what's most important, without recognizing that in the same, what they're doing is setting things up for big government. Because once you break these things out of the sacred bonds of the community and the family, and you move them into the marketplace, inevitably big government will consume them. I'll explain that more in a second. So what are the, some of the things? Okay, I'm going on about all these things we've moved into the marketplace, but what am I talking about specifically? Well, let's just look at traditional, you know, male and female bonds inside a marriage, right? So men obviously had several classic duties inside of a family. Just a few of them, of course, were protection. The male was the bigger and stronger member of the family. So it was their responsibility, first and foremost, to secure the safety of the family. Provision, material provision, was a big part of the male role in most societies. Of course, you need to go ahead and do things like, you know, just basic maintenance on a lot of things, building things, repairing things. Those were all often critical roles. And again, these are not always just done by the man. And we'll see that some of those things aren't, the things that are traditionally female aren't always just done by the woman as well. But these were the archetypes, right? These are the basic understandings usually. And finally, masculine guidance was a critical role that was provided by the father in many of these situations. Again, a lot of this stuff has been outsourced, and this is why the father is no longer required in so many families today. We see that protection has been handed off entirely to the state. There used to be a lot of play in when the state needed to step into protection. If you watch old movies, right? Just watch it. Watch it. Not even that old, 20, 30 years, year old movies. I'm not talking Casablanca here. You watch those movies and the teenagers get into trouble. There's a disagreement or something. And the sheriff doesn't immediately have to put that kid in juvie forever. They don't immediately have to get social services involved because there was a certain amount of conflict, a certain amount of danger that was mediated by the father. He was expected to protect the people around him. He was expected to protect his family. There were moments when the sheriff needed to step in. There were moments when an agent of the state did need to step in. But there was a lot of intermediate conflict resolution and things that could have been unsafe but were made safe by that kind of that mediating social fabric of the father, right? And that meant that the state didn't have to crack down. It didn't have to worry about safety of everyone at every moment. And that also meant that the state didn't have authority to do that at every moment. Many of these decisions were to be made by the father, were to be made by the family, were to be made by the extended family. How do we resolve this issue? Oh, that's a family problem, right? Or that's between families. It wasn't always left up to a guy with a gun and a badge. And so that's one role that has been stripped away and given entirely to the state. Again, provision, of course. Obviously we know that the welfare state has made single motherhood a reality in many ways because they remove the need for a man to provide. And of course, there's also a lot of issues with corporations and the expansion of labor there as well. However, that government backstop was a big problem, but that's also because we moved so much of the role of providing out of the hands of a working father. That's why corporations felt like they could start paying people less. They used to be that you had to pay a person not just a living wage for themselves, but for their families. It's, again, very strange. I know that TV is not reality, guys, so please stay with me here. I'm not just saying everything you see on TV is reality. However, there had to be some level of believability in television. And it used to be, again, you watch a television show from 20, 30 years ago, a guy could be a manager at a convenience store, or not a convenience store, but at a JCPenney's, a department store. That's what I was looking for, or something like that. They could just be, they didn't have to own the place. They didn't even need to be the general manager. They could just be like a manager at a shoe store or something. And they could be reasonably depicted as having four kids and a four bedroom house, something like that. That was a very normal thing that you could watch and see on television. And the wife could stay home. And that was assumed to be a reasonable thing to suggest on TV. Today, that's insane, right? Just for people to try to afford having two children, they're often both parents are working. That has shifted. Now, there's a lot of other things, and those also have a lot of questions in the market. We obviously need new cars and cell phones and eating out all the time. There are decisions that people are making which make it harder for them to own homes and have children. I'm not just saying it's the economic system. I'm not saying it's just, all of these decisions. There's personal responsibility as well. I know there are people out there who are sacrificing to make sure their wife can stay home and that they can have multiple children. They are choosing to have less materially so they can have more spiritually, so that they can have more in a moral and meaningful sense. So I'm not just trying to lay all of the blame at the feet of corporations or even the economic system. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that the used to be a something that you could depict reasonably on television and people would believe that. But we have gotten rid of that role because it was assumed, well, you can just pay people as an individual. You don't have to assume they have a family. You don't have to assume that they're taking care of a wife. You don't have a moral duty to make sure that the person who's working for you can go ahead and raise their kids and take care of their spouse on one salary. And that's much of that is because we broke that responsibility out of the family as a unit and went ahead and started treating people as individuals inside of a marketplace. Of course, the same goes for traditionally female roles when it comes to childcare, education, food preparation, all kinds of things that used to be filling the day of the average female in a family now is broken out into, you know, restaurants and into, schools and everything else. Again, none of this is new, right? There were always outside educational opportunities. There were schools that people sent their children to. However, it was not what the average person did, right? It was not the mass experience of moving that education or childcare out of the home and into a bunch of daycares that are half sponsored by government or completely owned by the government. But by moving those duties out of the home, by breaking them out of the family and transplanting them into the marketplace, we went ahead and created the expectation that the individual should be able to provide this. And if they couldn't provide it, they should be able to purchase it in the marketplace. And that's a big deal, because once you've broken those critical duties out of the family structure, a couple things happen. First, the market tries to go ahead and depersonalize these things and streamline them so it can create profitability and create efficiency. That's what the market does. It creates efficiencies. And the way that it does that is by homogenizing, standardizing this kind of stuff. The problem is that individuals don't work this way. And kids need, obviously, their parents for just the basic spiritual ties that it makes. The familial ties are critical. And there's something that a daycare worker or a school teacher or a cafeteria worker cannot provide to your children. But they also do more than that. Children are specific and individual. Mass education is a failure. And we can see that by the fact that no matter how much money we pour per pupil into our public education system, it only gets worse and worse. And so children need very specific education. They need very specific attention, along with the love and guidance and care that a parent can provide. And by putting that in the marketplace, by taking that out of the hands of the individual parent and putting into the hands of this mass system, you end up in a scenario where the average kid just becomes the lowest common denominator. They homogenize that education down to the lowest possible level so they can provide it to everyone. And they don't provide the individual education, the nuances that a parent who cares about their child would do. And so the quality of education goes down, the quality of food served to the kids goes down, and the quality of, just everything about what happens to that child goes down, because all of those things that were part of a sacred obligation, sacred bond, a personal relationship and care are stripped out, right? And this happens across everything. All of, home maintenance, the ownership of property, all of that gets taken out of the craftsmanship of the husband or the father, and it gets put into these mass produced products or sold out to other services. And what happens when we need to fill that labor and we need to make it cheaper and cheaper? Well, we start moving people into the country so that we can have, we start getting a bunch of illegal immigrants doing lawn maintenance because, the time of father is too valuable if he's even in a family, if he even has a family anymore. And so what happens is each one of these duties is broken out of the family and it's sold off piece by piece to different services. And in some ways they are more efficient than a family. In some ways they are cheaper than a family. In some ways they can do these things better and more efficiently to some degree than each individual family doing it themselves. That's true. But the problem is that personal touch, that inefficiency that comes from knowing the needs of your family, from caring about the needs of your child, from looking across the street and seeing a family that's hurting and giving them aid, the things that you lose when you don't see each and every person who's involved in your daily life in a church together, in a community that binds you together. Those things matter and they're intangible. You can't put them on a spreadsheet. You can't check your bank account and figure out where they are. But as you start to lose them, you start to notice your society fall apart. And that's a lot of what's happening right now. A lot of people are noticing that we're moving from a high trust society to a low trust society. And they don't know what happened. They don't understand why that happened. And it's because you can't put the things that make a high trust society on your spreadsheet. You can't go ahead and show up with a quarterly earnings report that demonstrates the high trust in your society. When you don't see people, when you don't know their names, when you don't bind yourself together with duty and responsibility, the trust in your society goes down. Now, we had a very high trust society. And so for a while, we were able to scale up and go ahead and abstract so many of these duties into the marketplace and assume that that trust will just keep going. We would just keep perpetuating it forever. Of course, I can hand these transactions off to the marketplace because everybody knows this is how you behave. Everybody will, of course, use the self-checkout in the right way. Everybody will pump gas. Everybody will get off the airplane in the same way, right? These are things we assumed were just normal and everybody knew them and they would go on forever. But that's not the case. The ability to have that high level of social coordination came from community. It came from a shared history, a shared tradition, a shared culture, a shared identity, a shared understanding that was bound together by that constant interaction with each other, by having the duties and responsibilities that we have to each other that are prescribed by our unified history, traditions, and moral vision, religion. All of these things are critical. And as we strip out each one of these things and we sell those duties off in the marketplace, we start to grow government. Well, how does that grow government? Okay, here's what happens. When we move those duties into the marketplace, eventually we recognize the failures. Once we are no longer a community that is responsible to each other, once we no longer bear those burdens and failures as a community, individuals start to fail. Now, when individuals fail in a community, we recognize, oh, that's Cindy. That's Bob's sister. Oh, that's Tom's kid. Are we really going to leave Tom's kid out on the street? Are we really going to ignore what Cindy is doing over there? Are we really going to leave her without a job or a way to feed her children? Are we really not going to care about these people? We have to see their family every day. And in those cases, you change the way that you address people because of this, right? You go ahead and change the way that you act towards people. But if the marketplace, if the individual is supposed to handle everything as a responsible individual in a marketplace, you say, oh, well, they can just, they should have had insurance. Oh, well, they should have gone out and bought, they should have paid somebody to do that for them. Oh, they should work harder, get another job, stop going to dinner so often. Now, again, these are all individual behaviors. Many times you do need to correct your individual behavior. In fact, a lot of times your failures are your own. I'm not saying that they aren't, but I'm saying that in a community, we understood the need to take the time. We allowed for friction. We didn't need everything to be hyper efficient. We understood that sometimes you have to slow down and look at the actual person across from you and understand that they are part of a network, a family, a community, and not just an individual who's failing alone. And what happens is as those duties are moved into the marketplace and those failures start occurring, once we realize that in the marketplace, people will lose and they will end up with nothing because there's not that community to stand behind them. There's not that safety net of family. There's not that safety net of organizations, churches, things like that, that will pick you up when you fall down. Once we realize that's gone, we start to hand those responsibilities over to the government. Because the truth is, and again, a lot of libertarians won't like this because the libertarian vision so often seems to be just let people drown. People won't do that. Like collectively, people cannot all be hyper-responsible individuals. And because they can't all be hyper-responsible individuals, a lot of people are going to fail. And you're not just going to stand around and watch people fail. I'm sorry, you're just not. That doesn't actually work. And so what happens is eventually the government starts to step in. We say, oh, we don't want this responsibility. We'll put it in the marketplace. And then when the marketplace fails people, the government says, oh, marketplace failed. we've got to step in. Now, again, for the hyper-liberal, for the libertarian, they say, well, the market never fails. Any failure of the market is just a failure of the government. It's always government intervention. It's always the government. That's the problem. It's never the market. But I'm sorry, that's just not true. That's just a religion, and it's a false religion. It's a lie. The marketplace does fail people because the marketplace doesn't care about people. It doesn't. It develops its own incentive structures, and those incentive structures eventually deroot themselves. They deracinate themselves from the communities they're supposed to serve, and they eventually do deterritorialize all of these things, and they eventually do reterritorialize them into the marketplace in a place where they are not taken care of correctly. And because of this, the government steps in, because people always look for a solution when the marketplace fails. And whenever the marketplace fails, the solution is government. And when the government gets to take on the responsibility that has been stripped out of the family and put into the marketplace, and then taken from the marketplace and moved into the government, their power always expands. Because again, as De Juvenal said, the only thing that stops the expansion of government, it's not Bill of Rights, it's not constitutions, it's not your rights as an American, none of that stops the growth of government. What stops the growth of government, what actually prevents government from growing, is other spheres of social responsibility, competing spheres of authority and control. We are all dependent. And if we are not dependent on our families, if we're not dependent on our communities, we will be dependent on the government. We will. And so if the responsibilities and duties are stripped out of the family and sold in the marketplace, eventually the marketplace will fail, and the things that were once part of the family will become part of the government. And this is how government grows. This is why government is always expanding, because it is taking on the duties that once sat inside the community. And it's not enough to just tell people, be more virtuous. That's true. You need to be more virtuous. But if you set up a system where this is constantly going on, where you're making it harder and harder for people to have communities, you're making it more and more difficult for people to start families, have children, bind themselves into these networks and associations, if you're actively undermining those incentives at every turn, which we are in many ways today, then you will end up in a society that is less virtuous. And again, that is not a free pass for the individual. That is not a free pass for us as a people. That's not a free pass for our moral actions or decisions. As an individual, you still have to make the decision, I am going to be virtuous. I'm going to take care of people. I'm going to put this on myself. There's just no escaping that. Okay. However, if you end up in this situation where you are constantly attacking people's ability to do that, you will see less of it. The government will become the backstop for all of these failed marketplace interactions. And we see this every time, right? Every time the economy fails, a housing market fails, we have a public health failure, or you know, whatever, the government grows in power. In every situation, the government gets to grab more and more power, because the things that were once done by the community, the things that were once done by the family, the things that were once done by other social spheres are now done by the government. And this is why once these barriers are gone, we have a hard time even imagining putting them back into place. So for instance, today conservatives talk a lot about parental rights, right? Because we see what's happening with the government. They're trying to indoctrinate kids with a lot of this, you know, transgender ideology, these kind of things. And so we talk a lot about parents' rights. However, when, for instance, another state, let's say, you know, another liberal state decides that they want kids to, you know, parents to be able to transition their kids at 8, all of a sudden we're like, no, you can't do that, right? Now, in other societies, and, you know, it's horrific, but in other societies, there wouldn't have been legal prohibitions in many cases against parents doing what they wanted with their children. The father was the head of the household, or the father and mother together were the heads of the household. Never a situation where the community always had the ability to put input on every one of their decisions, right? And the reason, again, was that the state did not get to do that. Now, what would happen is that the community, sorry, I said community there when I should have said state, the state did not have the ability to reach into every one of those situations. Now, what happened is that a lot of times the community would put the pressure on them. So if you wanted to be able to go to church, if you wanted to be able to do business with a lot of people there, you had to treat your kids a certain way. And even if the state wasn't going to step in to criticize or to take control of the way that you raised your children, if you wanted to function inside the society, you needed to go ahead and behave a certain way. Your kids need to behave a certain way. You had to raise them with certain values, and you had to treat them a certain way. And if you didn't, then people at church are going to look at you weird, and people in the market are going to look at you weird, and they're not going to want to talk to you, and they're not going to be with your friend, and they're not going to do business with you, and they're not going to invite you to, you know, be their partner in the next venture. Like, those are all things that would impact you. And the state didn't have to get involved in every one of these steps, because while the decision was ultimately yours, you still had the control. That was your social sphere. You were influenced by everyone else that you were dependent on. And so you didn't need the state to step in at every opportunity, because just like we talked about with kind of the father and that kind of those blurry borders, that where you know, the places where you needed protection, but you didn't need a guy with a gun and a badge. The same thing here with the parents. Yeah, you had technically the ability to treat your child how you wanted, but you better get at least this much right, or the community is going to shun you. They're not going to want to be around you. You're going to be held responsible for those actions. And it meant that the state didn't have to step in. But now we've gotten rid of all of that. We can't even imagine parents being ultimately in charge of their children and their well-being. And so we say, you know, the conservative will say, oh, well, no, the state should step in. And I get it. Like, there's a lot of horrific stuff that people are trying to do to their kids right now. So I totally understand why people want to go ahead and step in there. But we can't even get ourselves, even as people who say we're worried about big government, we can't even bring ourselves to a place where we could imagine parents actually being in control of their kids again. And that's because we've dissolved this responsibility both ways. Liberals and conservatives can't imagine a scenario where they actually let their neighbor raise their own kids. They think that the state would need to be involved in either direction. And a lot of that, you know, is because of the loss of virtue. You can't trust your neighbor not to, you know, go ahead and sterilize their kid at 8 years old at this point. That's terrifying. That is kind of where you're at when you're at in a very degenerate society that's lost its virtue. So I totally, again, I'm not here decrying people who are trying to protect children at all. What I'm saying is we've lost our ability to trust each other and to trust those alternative spheres of authority. And everybody wants the state. Everybody wants the total state. Everybody wants the state to solve these problems, because we simply cannot trust our neighbors at this point to resolve those issues for themselves. And so the battle comes for the Leviathan of the state, rather than for figuring out how to solve our problems as communities, as families. And that's a horrible problem. But that's mainly what I wanted to say about that, guys. I just wanted to explain how that transfers over, how all of those duties and responsibilities that used to be part of the family and community have been broken out individually and sold in the marketplace. And when the marketplace failed each one of those responsibilities, they eventually became the province of the government. And that's why it feels like having control of the government is so important, because it really does control everything at this point. We've broken out so many of those responsibilities. We've lost so much virtue. We've lost so much understanding what it is to, you know, to have duty and dependence. We've broken out so many of those relationships that we can't imagine a scenario where the state basically isn't in control of everything and the market isn't mediating all this stuff. And that's something that we're going to have to tackle, because if we don't understand how to rebind those things back into communities, then things are only going to get worse. It's only going to continue in this down this path, because the problem is that we have scaled these things too far, and we've removed too much responsibility, and we have moved too much of it into spheres where it was never supposed to go. And it's kind of brought us to the place where we are now. All right, guys, I'm going to go ahead and move over to one other thing that I wanted to discuss. We have a lot of questions of the people. So I'm going to move over to the questions of people, because there's a lot and I want to be able to get to everybody. All right. So let me see here. Cooper Weirdo says, this is interesting, Oren, but you missed something. See, there's a line, and this line, it needs to go up. Yeah, that's really is the religion of many people, right? The line must go up, and we have to go ahead and sacrifice any and everything to make sure that the line goes up. It doesn't matter, you know, whether it's the, you know, the family, the community, our nations, our borders, you know, the line has to go up. And conservatives have, again, just been as complicit as the left in with much of this. And they, I think that's another reason that Donald Trump, for as many faults, got as much support as he did. A lot of people were tired of losing their jobs, and they were tired of being told it was okay to lose their jobs. They were tired of a right wing, a Republican, a conservative position that said, oh yeah, it's fine. You learn to code, buddy. Just go figure out how to code, or move across the country. Just rip up your family and your roots and move somewhere else. People got tired of that. They wanted to hear somebody who said, I'm going to stand there and defend your jobs. You can go ahead and say, well, Donald Trump didn't do that, or wasn't effective enough at it. Fair enough. However, just someone who's finally willing to address that, I think, spoke to a lot of people. Kruger Rito says, you could have had a Corvette, Oren, so there. Yeah. Yeah. Why do you need a functioning society when you can have a Corvette? I do like Corvettes. I'm a big fan of the original Stingray. I mean, the new Stingrays are fine. But the late 60s Stingrays are particularly beautiful cars, but they are not worth your society. Let's see here. Seneca says, this opening monologue is just Luke 16:13. No servant can serve two masters. He will hate one and love the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. I'll be very clear. Truth is found in the Bible. And so you will find me often, hopefully, if I'm doing things right, if I'm properly aligned, I will be aligned with the wisdom of the Bible. And you can always accuse me of just ripping off the Bible. I will always cop to that charge. Hopefully that's what I'm doing all of the time. Let's see. Perspicacious Heretic says, was it the family unit that ultimately kept capitalism at its optimum? That's a great question, and one that we have to think about, right? So I'm sure many of you are familiar with distributism, if for no other reason than my buddy and one of our well-loved creators in the sphere, Dave the Distributist, has him as that name. As the G.K. Chesterton, is one of the key guys in distributism. And distributism's main thing is treating the family as the core economic unit instead of the individual. Now, I don't know if every part of distributism actually works in the real world. I don't know if there's a mixed economy system that works with a more distributist outlook and capitalism. It is a very difficult question as to whether the efficiency of capital can be properly harnessed and territorialized. I talked about this a lot in the accelerationism and kind of the capital escape episodes I've done with Nick Land's theory. I don't want to rehash all of that now. But if you want to go back and watch those, you can kind of watch as I ponder this. This is something I'm still thinking a lot about. At the end of the day, I'm not an economist, so that's not my appeal to authority. There, you can be right and not be an economist. In fact, that's often being an economist is often a barrier to being correct. But I'm just saying, all of my economic theory is not ducks in a row, so I can't really blurt all that off to you right now. But I will say that this is the question that I ponder a lot, and it's something that we need to solve, because if we don't, we're going to continue to face the problems that we have now. Seneca says, no servant can serve two masters. He will either serve his family or serve government. You cannot serve both God and government. Yep, absolutely, man. The stupid demon says, the marketplace of ideas does not select for truth. It selects for power. The two overlap a lot, but where they don't is where you get into trouble. And that's exactly right. Yeah. The marketplace of ideas does not actually select for truth. And all we have to do is look at, many of the ways that the marketplace has been manipulated, and almost always through power. And so there is no perfectly free market. There is no perfectly free marketplace of ideas. It will always be heavily influenced by power. And that's most certainly where a lot of people are going when they're putting their decision-making power in that arena. Creepy Rita says, the corpos want you to have a family. It's collectivism. They want you to stop from cooming and consuming. I know what freedom is. Yeah, many a classical liberal or libertarian will tell us these things. But yeah, that of course, is the cry of many a man who does not want to make a commitment to others. Let's see here. Florida Henry says, 70s kid here. It really does seem obvious to me that Reaganomics caused this, and Republicans absolutely kowtow to corporations. Yeah, there's really no way around the fact that for a very long time, Republicans were corporate cheerleaders, and they bowed to corporations in pretty much all every instance. In many ways, that's understandable if you see them as allies against the left, which they seem like for a while. However, I think the thought of Sam Francis is very valuable in Leviathan and His Enemies. He explains why this was really a temporary animosity between establishment and corporations and the radical left, and why those things have kind of now aligned, why we see woke capital today and what was happening there. But at the time, of course, a lot of people didn't know that. And it made, again, because communism was a very real threat, we have to remember this. It's easy for us to look back and say, oh, how could people in the past have made this mistake, when we don't put ourselves into where they were. Communism was a real threat in the 70s. There really was a scare. Now, maybe it was overblown in some ways, but there really it was a real geopolitical foe, and it really could have wiped out humanity in theory. And so you have to understand that the corporation and capitalism kind of as a tool against communism makes perfect sense at that time. And so just when we're judging all of these things, understand that sometimes you do need to put yourself in the context, the historical context of what was happening. But the results of that are devastating. They are what you said. And so I think that while that maybe was a alliance that was made at the time for an understandable reason, it's something that has certainly outlived its usefulness. And you can see this because corporations have turned on conservatives quite quickly. And luckily, a lot of conservatives are learning that lesson, but they learned it after the corporations already turned on them, which kind of is a problem. Creeper Weirdo says, sounds like socialism. Socialism is when capitalism is criticized. No one on the right has criticized capitalism ever. Yes, that is sadly very often the case. The minute you say, maybe there are excesses, maybe there are problems, that we need to remember that as we kind of operate our economic system, all of a sudden people start screaming socialist. But what are you going to do? At some point, we have to break out of that very simple mindset. Tiny Stupid Demon says in Elaine, I'm sorry, I don't know exactly how to say that. I've seen the name before, but I'm just not familiar with the proper pronunciation. Elaine de Bois. Sorry, I do not speak French, just in case you were curious. Book on Carl Schmitt. He points out that not only did you get deterritorialization, you got detemporalization, i.e. everyone is trapped in an eternal year zero. Yeah, he... I don't know. I'm not familiar with his work, again, though I have heard an increasing amount about him. But other people, even communists like Mark Fisher noted this. So this is something that a lot of people have noticed, and I think that's exactly right. Death says, but LGBT and women's rights activist James Lindsay said it's a blessing. Yes, I have no doubt that he did. The atheist... secularist champion of the right, I guess. It's amazing how we never learn our lessons, do we, guys? It's just the neocon cycle is always there for us. Dark Glow in the Dark says, half the time when the marketplace fails, it's some war on poverty or some great society planning. Power wants to expand, but showing restraint is truly powerful. Yeah, again, a lot of people will correctly point out that the government's involvement will create a failure in the marketplace. That's very true. The problem is, and I'm just going to reference all of my old episodes here, but I did an episode with Academic Agent. He came out and we talked about kind of the problem with the idea of the free market in the first place. If you want to, I don't want to break down all of that yet again, but if you want to go back and listen to that episode, we go into it, in detail for over an hour. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. However, there is, of course, to your point, there is often a heavy intervention from the government to choose winners and losers in the marketplace. And that is most often when you see failure. All right, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. Thank you so much for coming by. Thank you for all of your questions. Lots of questions to get today. Always great. That's one of the things I love about the live streams. Get to go ahead and interact with you guys, see what's going on, have you pick my brain. and I get to pick yours. And that definitely makes for, I think, a better show. All right. If it's your first time on the YouTube channel, make sure that you go ahead and subscribe. Make sure you turn on your notifications, click the bell, everything, so you can see these streams when they go live. And of course, if you'd like to get these broadcasts as podcasts, make sure that you go ahead and subscribe to the Orrin McIntyre Show on your favorite podcast platform. When you do, leave a rating or review. It really helps with the algorithm magic. If you'd like to pre-order my upcoming book, The Total State, where I talk about this in even more detail, you can go ahead and go to Amazon. Just click there and pre-order the book. It'll be out on May 7th. Thank you once again, everybody, for watching. And as always, I will talk to you next time.